my husband and I got in deep conversation about this one evening, and I said, I truly do believe that humans are extremely capable of creating their world and business. If you are willing to adapt and overcome whatever it takes, if you can just make that your understanding in life in general, you're going to go a lot further. Those challenges are going to get easier and easier.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Business Aspirin. I'm your host, Clint Janelle, and I have with us today Tina Craig. And Tina's with Spotless. And Spotless is out of Nicholasville, Kentucky, in the restoration space. Tina, how the heck are you?
I'm great, Clint. Thanks for asking. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So glad to have you on. We always love it when we get to have people that we know on the podcast and chat and talk about experience. So I'm super excited to have you guys here. Thank you for taking the time to do this.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked a little bit about the podcast and kind of our goal is to help entrepreneurs overcome little struggles and find nuggets of information, hence the name Business Aspirin, to avoid the headaches, right? And you and I are both fully aware of headaches and how some of that goes. And so we, you know, I just want to kind of dig into some of that. So who is Tina?
Well, so I am a part of, so I am the other half of Spotless. I am married. I've been married for approximately 32 years. I have two children, and I have lived in many places in the United States, and where I am currently has been my favorite, and the people are the reason. The people are the reason we moved here, and the people are the reason we stay. I've been a business owner. I'm business-minded, been a business owner since I was about 8 years old, and that comes from just my family, and they've been business owners, many of them, and my upbringing. Just, you need to get out there and you need to make it happen. Nobody's going to do it for you. So just constantly after the next thing.
Yeah. So just entrepreneurial mindset, just kind of ingrained into you from your family. What was the first business? What did you do as an 8 year old?
Yeah. So as an 8 year old, I had a mowing business and I was a very tiny 8 year old. So mowing lawns was from the second handlebar.
Yeah, sure.
On the lawnmower, which my mother would scream and yell, "That's dangerous." And my dad would be, "Leave her alone. She's got this." And I also had a paper route. So I did both. I mowed lawns and I had a paper route. And that was exciting. That's where I learned that you can actually, if you get out there and hustle, you can actually make your own world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that was probably the best experience for a young child to know, to learn that the world's going to beat you up. It's not going to be fun many times, but you're after a bigger agenda, right? You're after that freedom, ultimately. And I think that's what a lot of us entrepreneurs talk about, is it's the freedom. We would never leave this grind because of the freedom it gives us.
Yeah, it's hard. It's not without challenge. It doesn't mean that you aren't required to do certain things because you have that freedom. In fact, you're often required to do more, right? But yeah, you get some freedoms to do the things that you choose to do if you do that. Have you ever had a real job?
I have. So as we all know, in business, you're not promised anything and you've got to get out there and you've got to go after it. And we've hit economic downturns that have ruffled our feathers and put us in kind of a scary position before. And you learn through those too. And so anytime that we have hit those and we weren't prepared, we didn't do our homework ahead of time, right? And we weren't prepared. I went out there and I got a job. I did whatever it took to make sure that we weren't going to be in a financial position where we could never own a business, because it does take money to get yourself set up in business. Goodness. And be able to run. So if you really run your family or yourself at a deficit, right? If you go out there and you buy up the world and you get, take out all these loans, and you have all this money owed, guess what? Your chances are much lower unless there's someone out there who believes in you and is willing to invest in you and give you an opportunity. And I've had that happen. I've opened up several businesses where I did not have everything I needed. So I went out there and found the people, rallied the people who did have it and believed in me. And we joined forces together and tackled it.
That's so beautiful though, like, because there's a lot of times in the entrepreneurial world, individuals get lost in trying to make something happen. You know, naturally, we want to beat our chest and talk about how good we're going to be able to do this. And when things start to struggle a little bit, if there's an easy way out, a lot of entrepreneurs take that easy way out. And in your case, it sounds like, no, I'm going to go dig in harder and I'm going to find somebody that's going to help me. And we're so accustomed to not relying on help or getting assistance or seeking somebody to help us. So I definitely want to dig in that. Talk about that for a little bit. Like, what made you, what business were you in at the time? And then what said, okay, Tina, we got to go ask for help. And the willingness and then that internal conversation. Let's just talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. So let me think, because I've been in business for, oh my gosh, over 25 years, right? So when I met my husband, I was 17, and I had, I don't know if you're familiar with Amway, but my parents, okay, my parents had gotten in to Amway, and I saw what they were doing. And to own my own business, I wanted to go after something. I wanted something more. And so at 16, I was involved with them in the Amway business. I was going to the functions and doing the things with them. And at 17, I said, okay, I just turned 17 actually that week. And I had said to my parents, I want to be able to do this. And everybody said, my dad said no, which was really weird because he's the one that got me getting the, you know, the lawn mowing business going, right? And doing the paper route and stuff like that at the age of 8. My mother, she came to me and she goes, you get me those papers and I will sign them and you will own your own business. And so it was kind of funny to see that happen. So it was just convincing them to let me do that. So then I started that. I met my husband and I convinced him to do it, convinced his family to do it. And it just kind of, you know, grew from there. So that business, unfortunately, this was probably the best lesson and the hardest lesson early on, young like that. I had sponsors who were doing some illegal things and I did not know that. And so I got to the point where my checks, they were taking my money is what it came down to. So I was making good money for a young person and they were taking my checks. And I think what that was about was I was young. So they're like, what is she going to do? You know? Well, they didn't realize that I also have a lot of spitfire in me. So I literally spent an entire 24-hour period. I think my husband thought I was going to go crazy. And I documented everything into a ream of paper. It was what it came out to with all the documentation. And I took it to the corporate, Amway corporate, and we had a legal proceeding and I won. And that was vindicating because it put them in their place. It let them know you can't do this to people. It gave me my money. I finally got my money. And then I realized that that was business in general. Like there's sharks in the water and you've got to be ready for those sharks. And during that period of time, I did struggle because, you know, that money, I was counting on that. I earned that money. I had to wait to get those checks. So I had to do other things to bring that money in. So I found other ways to make the money. But I think probably one of the scariest times we had as a couple in business, we had made a decision to move out of state. We moved out of state thinking that we were going to be able to hit the ground running with business. And when we got there, the state informed us that there had been some major fraud in the industry. And as a result of that, they were not issuing licenses for that type of business. So here we are. We have spent a whole bunch of money to move to this state to launch this business because it was deemed the fastest area to grow a business in the United States at that time. We had the plan. We had everything laid out. We had owned that same business previous years and did amazing with it. So we knew we could do. We knew what our capability was in a very short period of time. And we knew the profit margin was extremely big. And so we were just salivating at the opportunity. And we got there and they basically slapped us with that. And we were like, okay, don't tell us that we can't. Tell us what we have to do in order to get it done. And they just looked at us and said, guys, you're not hearing us. You're in the middle of a political battle and a legal battle. The feds are involved. The states are involved. It's not going to happen right now. We're not going to issue you the license that you need to do this because there's a bigger thing going on in this industry that it's got it locked down. So I'm sorry. So I went and got a waitressing job. I'm like, okay, we're not going to be able to do this right now. It's not never. It's just not right now. As soon as they take that lift off of the industry in this state, then we can hit the ground running with it. Well, in the time that we were waiting for that to happen, we discovered other business opportunity. And so we just jumped on it and went with it. My husband, I opened up a small school. My husband opened up a cleaning business, cleaning floors and upholstery. And we just fell in love with what we were doing. We were doing extremely well. And then when they notified us that we could get that lift came off and we could now apply and go ahead and do it, we were like, yeah, we're good.
Yeah, that's great.
We don't need this. So, but yeah, I've taken odd jobs. I've done odd jobs. Gosh, I mean, you just do whatever you have to do.
And especially given the culture right now, that's one of the things that's certainly a conversation, right? What's the mindset like when you go through a situation where you arrive there, right? Like there's a high level of stress. And obviously, you know, in that particular situation, there's no way to actually start your business. It's not like you can continue to try to persevere. So, okay, I'm going to get a job. But you decided to stay and get a job in hopes of opening that business rather than returning where you were. So talk about that, because again, like I know plenty of people that try to go into the music world or try to go into acting or any of those types of things or try to open a business. And when the opportunity is easy to exit and things get hard, because it's going to get hard, right? Like there's not any part of it that's not going to be hard. Then it's quick to be like, all right, well, I'm out. I'm done. Like this is too hard. So talk about that mentality of, no, we're going to persevere. We're going to push through. We're here. We're staying.
Yeah. So I had a guy interview me at a trade show. It's been about a year ago. And he said, give us one nugget, one thing that you would tell anybody out there who was wanting to start their own business. What is the one thing you would say to that person? What's the one thing you would have wanted somebody to say to you before you dove in? And I would tell anybody who was looking at doing anything on their own business-wise that the number one thing you have to get exercised is right between your ears. It's this up here. It's your mindset. And that mindset needs to be adapt and overcome whatever it takes. And I use the example of we have athletes who have, and I read an article about this, athletes who have said, I conquered the person who took us all the way to this level, right? We're a pole jumper, right? And we were able to jump this high and they met that and they got a big gold medal and did great. And humanity thought that that was the highest that a human could ever jump until the next guy did it. He went higher. And then after him came the next guy, right? So it's between our ears, it's our mindset, it's what we're thinking that allows us to go wherever we want to go. And the statement, I think, that you can be anything you want and you can do anything you want is a true statement. My husband and I got in deep conversation about this one evening, and I said, I truly do believe that humans are extremely capable of creating their world, regardless of what challenges they have or deficiencies they have. I recently got to go to a conference and there was a gentleman there, and forgive me, I don't remember his name, but he had no arms and no legs. And he's extremely successful. And they showed a video of him as a baby growing up.
Was it Nick Vayachik?
What's that?
Nick Vayachik? Was it
that
him?
Yes, that's him. And he's an amazing human being. But he's a testament to getting your mind and your mindset straight. And in business, I truly believe that in business, if you are willing to adapt and overcome whatever it takes, if you can just make that your understanding in life in general, you're going to go a lot further. Those challenges are going to get easier and easier. There are two young men that wrote a book called Do Hard Things. That book talks about when the hardships hit, it's a blessing. It's not a curse. You just have to be able to find the silver lining in it. You've got to find that crack of daylight that allows you to move on to the next level. It's almost like playing a game, you know, like a Mario Brothers game. You're going to advance. And it's going to hurt. You're going to have a lot of challenges and, you know, the sharks are going to come after you and all the things. But if you can just find the light and just keep pushing through, you'll get there. You just have to be willing to do that.
There's so many nuggets in what you just said in that little section. Hopefully I can remember all of them. We can jump into them. But the first one being the self-limiting belief, right? Whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. And so we're so easy and so quick to just be like, oh, I'm not going to be able to do that. And rather than try to persevere through it. And, you know, it's intriguing to me that we're, as a society, we're very quick to just do the easy thing.
Yeah. You know?
And one of the things I say to my kids all the time, which is funny you bring up that book, is we can do hard things. Like I say we can do hard shit, right? We can suffer through, we can do hard shit. And there's studies that have been done, like scientifically, when you push up against something that's hard and you quit on it, you become a much weaker individual. But when you persevere through it, you become a much stronger individual. And like, that's what I want for my kids, right? I want my kids to be able to persevere through some of this stuff that's seemingly just overwhelming, that you're never going to be able to, insurmountable odds that are going to prevent you from being able to be what you want. And, you know, God willing, my kids are going to be resilient as a result of just some of those things that we try to push through and push into, because we're all capable of doing more than we think we can. We live in a society that's pretty comfortable. And even those that don't have a lot more than most of the world. And so we just perceive it as, well, this is a little more difficult than I would like for it to be. And I don't like that. And so I'm going to take a different path. But the reward on the other side of that perseverance is unbelievable. Go ahead.
Yeah. When I get challenged or I have something that appears to be devastating happening, you know, it's hard to not let your blood pressure go up or to not get anxious, right? Because that's normal. And if you didn't get anxious, well, then I think that tells you you're done with whatever it is,
sure.
Right?
Sure,
because fair. If you're not anxious, then that means you're not invested. You're not afraid to lose that investment. So getting anxious is normal and it's good. But now when a challenge hits, I look at that and I say, even to the team, here it comes, guys, it's coming. When they're looking at me going, oh my gosh. And I'm going, no, this is good. Like, I get it. It sucks. And everybody's really scared and really worried right now, but this is good. That means there's a piece of gold on the other side of this brick wall that we're beating our head against. We just have to figure out how to see the daylight and get through to it. It is going to have a silver lining somewhere in it. And it always does. And our clients, when our clients are going through it, I meet clients out in the field all the time and they're crying or they're upset. And we sit down and we have a conversation about where they're going to go from A to Z and that we have a plan for this. We're going to answer their questions. And I say to them, you can't see it right now, but I promise you that somewhere in here, there is an amazing silver lining to what's going on. And you are going to be thankful that you were gifted this challenge. And that's how I look at it. And that's how I communicate that to other people. You're being gifted a challenge. And we grow through those challenges. And it always happens every single job. There's always something. And the client often will call me and say, you were right. This is what we got out of this. This is what happened. And that's a fun, I look forward to that. That's what drives me in the industry that we're in.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. How did you get into this space? I think you alluded to it a little bit earlier, but how long have you guys had Spotless? How long have you been in the restoration space?
So we've been in the restoration mitigation industry for over 25 years, and we got into it. My husband owned the cleaning company, and I had the small school, and I had sold that to a lady by the name of Joanna. Did not see the economic crash coming as quickly as it did. I mean, I knew it was inevitable, right? The 08 crash was inevitable. It was going to happen. And so when it did hit, and it hit in 07, the end of 07, it was like, oh, okay, so it's here. It's here now. And that was another challenge that we hit. Joanna and her husband lost their home. He lost his job. They went through an enormous amount of challenge themselves. And I ultimately did not end up getting to collect on what was owed to me for the business that I had handed over to her. My husband, we had enough money. We operated on one income. So that talking about keeping yourself away from the line that takes you off the edge. And so we had money. And when the 08 crash happened, I said, I want to move. I want to move the family. So he said, all right, got the U.S. map out, drew a line across the U.S., said, don't go above this line. I hate the cold, and I'll follow you wherever you want to go. So we ended up picking Kentucky because of the people. And there's a beautiful story in that, how that happened. And when we decided to branch his company out here, I stayed back and I ran mine and I ran the cleaning company that he had out there while he came here and started the second branch of it here. And when I finally got to Kentucky and got grounded, we just, him and I had that back and forth of, okay, what are you going to do? What am I going to do? And he's like, I really need help. Like, I need to grow this business and I need somebody that can do that. You've sold this to Joanna, so you don't have that anymore. What are you going to do? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I guess I'm going to join you. Like, I'm down for that. And we did not realize how hard it is for a married couple to run a business together. I had my thing. He had his. We helped each other, but I made my decisions. He made his, right? Ultimately, we were the owners of our own castle. And we didn't cross those lines. Now, he would give me advice. I would give him advice. But now here we are. I'm joining. I'm officially joining the company, right, as an owner. And we hit the ground running together. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can't do this. These employees, there's not enough respect. There's not enough this, not, you know. And I'm like, they all have to go. They all have to go. So we fired everybody. And he said, well, what are we doing? I said, it's you and me. We're going to go out on the truck together. So for 2 years, him and I went out on the truck together, and it was, and when you talk challenge, that was challenging, right? Because not only are we having to navigate business together, grow business, we've got his business still out in Arizona. We've got the business here in Kentucky that we're growing. I am now realizing I'm not getting any of that money from Joanna that I was supposed to get. So there's a challenge. We're in the economic belly, right? This downswing. Yeah.
Sure.
08, and him and I decide to fire everybody and go on the truck together. And we're out on jobs. And I'm like, so I don't know that I like how we did that. And I don't know that the customer appreciated the way that that was done. And so we start butting heads, and we butted heads through all of the growth of, okay, this is how our employees need to do this. This is why, you know, when Tim was out there, this wasn't aligning because he didn't have the tools he needed, or we were putting him in a bad position, not thinking it through from his vantage point or the customer's vantage point. So we got to see all of that and work all of that out. And then we started hiring. And as we hired, we knew better how to coach up those individuals. It isn't all technical. There's a lot that goes into doing a job. It's not about any monkey can come and jump in and do this. It takes a certain personality type to work with those consumers. It takes a certain personality type to actually do and have a high bar and do a high bar level of production. And that's what we had, was a high bar. We wanted these people to deliver that high bar. And then as we went through the crash that was happening, I noticed that we were a want business, not a need. And I was getting calls from commercial clients who were like, look, we've closed 8 of our stores because we're not doing well. And we're going to get a mop bucket and just like clean our own floors because we can't afford anything right now. And so we were losing that. So that really made me go, oh, hold on. This is not okay. Like this is anybody can do this, right? Clean their own floors and their own upholstery, or they can just deal with the sippy cup marks and not worry about the couch today, right? Sure. Or this year. So I started looking into other verticals that worked well with the equipment we already had, with the knowledge we already had. And I started falling into this information about water damage. And so I started doing some research on it and I started talking to my husband about it. And he goes, stop. I'm like, no. He's like, Tina, I have the perfect world. I work Monday through Friday. I make my hours. I decide who I'm going to clean for and who I'm not. The world isn't barking at me at all hours of the night. I don't have people who are stressed out because they need something done yesterday. My clients are usually very happy. They have the money to pay me. I don't have to fight with somebody to get my money. And I'm like, I know, honey, I get that. But we're talking about the difference between hundreds of thousands of dollars a year and millions of dollars a year. We can live off of the hundred thousands, right? But we can thrive big time and set ourselves up in different verticals outside of this industry if we're willing to deal with the pain and the struggle. So it took months of that conversation and arguing between the two of us. And then one of our employees called us while we were on a road trip. And he said, our apartment complex that we do every month just had a flood in like 7 or 8 units. And they called and they want us to go do it. He goes, can I go do it? And I'm like, go do it. Like, go get it done. So yeah, he goes and he does it. And I don't know if he knows what he's doing. I'm just like, it's an apartment complex. Just go do it. You say you know how to do it. Go do it. Show me you can do that. So he does it. The ticket comes back and it's amazing. It's a great ticket. The guy pays it. No question. We're done. So then my husband and I are in the car and we're driving and Jason calls and he's like, so I did this and this is what we got paid, blah, blah, blah. And Paul goes, wow, that's a lot of money for 3 days of work. I'm like, yeah. And he goes, that's a lot of profit. I'm like, uh-huh, a heck of a lot more profit than what we're used to. And he's like, okay, let's start talking. So on this 2-week road trip that we had, we talked and talked and talked and talked. And finally, we're in the car and he looks at me and he says, fine, get it done, but you better work fast because I might change my mind. So I had already turned over a lot of the rocks to figure out how to get what we needed, right? But I still had a lot of things that I didn't know about the industry. And those are all those little obstacles that came along the way. I'm like, oh, okay. So I didn't know about that. Oops. You know, we'll figure it out and we'll get it done. And I have a picture of my husband at the very first training we went to, and he's standing up in a box truck and he's got his arms up and he's looking out the back of the box truck at this training camp. And he's got this look on his face and it's kind of like a, what did I just sign up for? Kind of look, you know? But within 1 year, we made that jump from the hundreds of thousands of dollars in revenue to the millions. And it was a game changer for us. And then we advanced ourselves into those other verticals that I was telling you about, investing in other businesses and other people to set us up for retirement and also to create kind of a hedge against whatever challenges were going to come and hit us in the future.
Yeah, sure. And it's interesting because, so that would have been 2008. So 17 years ago, we're dealing with like the mold industry kind of is the mid late 90s to 2000s. And then 2000, 2008, we started to change a lot about understanding how to better dry structures. So you're coming into that when there's kind of a dynamic change in what's happening in the space at some level where we started trying to go away from all the cut and gut restoration and tearing everything out that got wet to actually drying structures, hopefully properly. Some of that we did well, some of that we didn't do well then, but it is what it is. It's where we're at now. Statute of limitations is gone, so we're not responsible for anything now anyway. But it's an interesting time to try to jump into that and learn how to navigate those things and get the training. What's the most unique thing you've experienced in doing this?
In the mitigation industry? I would say the most unique thing for me is finding out what the industry, what's been in plain sight all these years that the industry just didn't know was there. And I'm talking about mold. I'm talking about mycotoxins and endotoxins and the bacteria. There's been a lot of development in the last 10 to 15 years in that arena of knowledge, you know, learning about mold and mycotoxins and all these things and what they can do to humans and understanding that it's not limited to the FDA or our food. It is also very relevant to our indoor living and discovering we're very science-based here. So we like to dive in. We like to work with researchers. So we work with Spotless has been working with for the last 2 years, researchers in Australia and over in Europe, Japan. We've been working with them and Safety Australia, learning from Safety Australia, what these other countries have done the studies on and learned about mold and all these different toxins. And then finding out that all these people that we've gone in and we've done restoration for years and didn't know, we just didn't know what we didn't know, right? So I look back at all of that and I'm like, gosh, how did we not know? Well, then moving forward, we go and we take all this training and we're working with the researchers and we're actually doing field studies and giving this information to these researchers. And they're taking that to HazWhopper and Safety Australia and IICRC. And they're trying to get people to understand this is a big issue. This is something we need to address because as an industry, we're not doing it right. Okay. We're not taking care of these houses correctly. And then you start looking at the construction industry. We're not even building houses appropriately. And so we're making people sick from the ground up. And learning about that and then looking at the medical side of it, you can get the structure good. But if the human is sick inside the structure, you got to get the human well, right? Because they're going to return to the home and go, I still feel like crap. Well, yeah, of course you do. You're poisoned. You're sick. So now you got to get with a doctor. Well, then we started looking at the medical industry and interviewing doctors and finding out like 85 to 90% of the medical field is unaware of this poisoning that happens from indoor air pollution, right? From microbial growth, mycotoxins, endotoxins, all of that. And so for us, learning that and digesting all of that and being able to communicate that to our clients, segueing ourselves into a safer arena, because eventually, I mean, you said statute of limitations, right, runs out, but one day we're all going to go to our deathbed. And I want to be able to say, we did it right, despite the cost and the people that we took care of, they're good to go. Now, we still have a lot to learn. I mean, I'm sure there's things we still don't know, right? And there are probably things that we're still doing wrong. And science will eventually evolve and teach us that. But I think the shocker for me is how many people in the mitigation industry turn a blind eye to it because one, equate it to, oh gosh, that's going to take more labor. It's going to cost more money. We're going to have to increase our insurance. Yep, you probably should. And we're going to have to do all these things. And we just don't have the time for it. We're busy. And for us, we looked at it and said, no, this is opportunity. If you get your head right and you look at it, this is opportunity. It's challenge on the front end. It's just like going from the carpet cleaning to mitigation industry. Yes, there's a challenge. But there is a big segue to a much more profitable business if you're willing to take the time, educate yourself, educate your team, educate your clients. There is a much bigger opportunity there on the other side. And it allows you to give these people what they should have been getting all along in all these jobs we've been doing. So, yeah.
And it's a
I don't know if I answered that question or not.
You did. I mean, I think there's a lot to that in terms of, you know, we could dig into a lot of that, but I think you answered it well. But it's a slippery slope because you start going, okay, well, I need to protect this building and my people. But some places we go into, we have no idea if there's anything present or not, and you're just there and you're exposed. I go to a hotel or I go to dinner or I go to a shopping center or whatever, and I'm continuously exposed to some of these things because it's not been done well for a long period of time. You know, I know for us, when we first started, I mean, I've been in this for 30 years at this point. We didn't protect ourselves the way we should have to do the mitigations or remediations, and you're tearing shit out and you're working hard and laboring hard and breathing heavy. Yeah. It just was what it was.
Yeah.
And so we've learned a lot in the process. I contend that I've got damage to my body as a result of some of the things we've done in the past. And it's just something I'm gonna have to endure and survive. Maybe it ends my life early, maybe it doesn't, but God willing, we'll see, you know, quality of life as long as we can. So what is something that just absolutely has shocked you, like you didn't see coming in the entrepreneurial journey?
Hmm.
Besides COVID, you can't say COVID because that shocked all of us.
Something that has shocked me in the entrepreneurial, and I don't know that there's anything that has shocked
that's
me.
That's good. If you haven't been blindsided by anything, that's great, right?
Yeah,
I mean, there's times that you know, you talked a little bit about we weren't prepared for, we hadn't planned for. As a result, we had to go do these things, you know, go get a job, go get a waitressing job, start a little school or whatever the case may be. But I just know if there was something.
Well, you're talking about us, our company getting shocked by something.
Yeah, just you in the process of coming through 8 year old to now, what is something that just like, you just look at it and you go, I can't believe that that's how this works or how the world works or how people act or anything that was like blindsided you in your journey to get where you are.
Yeah. Oh, well, so blindsided, I would say how the insurance industry behaves. We've had, obviously, that was something that when I said, hey, let's do mitigation, I did not know that the insurance industry as a whole, right, is probably one of the most unethical industries, period. And I think it started off with great intentions. I think it was created to solve a problem. But I think the thing that bugs me the most is that we have a government that handcuffs us as consumers to a product that we are not given a choice as to whether or not we have it, right? You have to have health insurance. You have to have car insurance. You have to have homeowners insurance if you have a loan on that property, right? And most Americans have a loan on that property. And so they handcuff us to this mammoth, right? And then we don't, as Americans, we don't want government coming in and telling the insurance industry how to do business. We don't want, because that's a slippery slope. And so as much as we all hate the handcuffs and despise it, we don't want the government to step in and do that and say, well, now you can't, you got to do this way or do this that way. But there's a problem here because the insurance industry understands and knows that we're just a rotating table of people. And you're going to have Erie until you don't anymore. And then you're going to move to Allstate. And then you're going to move to Cincinnati. And you're going to move to, you know, insurance. And you're just going to keep moving, right? So we're just rotating through them. And they know that. And they know that we can't go any, we can't not have it. They know we're here to stay. They know they're going to get our premiums. And then when it comes time for them to deliver on the other side, they don't deliver. And they have all these excuses as to why they don't deliver, right? I don't know if you're familiar with Ed Cross, but he just did a huge national Zoom meeting, team meeting, and he talked in depth about the insurance industry is putting mitigation companies and restoration companies out of business at an all-time high right now. And he talked about that. What's happening is that the insurance industry doesn't care that those people are going out of business.
Not at all.
It doesn't bother them at all. What I would love to see is for our government not to tell them how to do business, because they should be able to make their profits and make their money and do their thing, however they do that, right? Their prices should be whatever their prices should be. And I think fair market should be the thermometer on that, you know, that keeps them in check. But I think that what the government could do is to step into the insurance industry and say, listen, you're going to, when you sell the product, because it starts at the sale of the product, when these agents are selling the product, you're going to tell your client everything that they're not going to get paid for. They need to know. They need to know what the piggy bank needs to have in it to protect them against all the holes. And that needs to include that, hey, Erie Insurance, right? They're not going to pay for maybe OMP, or they're not going to pay for this. So when your mitigation company comes in, these are charges that the mitigation company could charge, and you are going to be left holding that. So you need to have a big enough piggy bank to cover that. And then you need to pay your premiums every month. So they just need to be telling the purchaser where they need to have safety nets to catch them when that. And but I think the reason that they don't do that is because I think a lot of people would probably shy away from buying a policy if they really showed all the holes.
They're not going to show you that because their marketing says otherwise, right? You're in good hands. We're good neighbors.
Yes.
We're on your side. You know, all those things that I don't know which companies those are. I've just made those statements up in my head.
Because
I've never heard those marketed anywhere before. But yeah, that's exactly what it is. So they're not going to tell you those things because that obviously is detrimental to their marketing. So
yeah,
I agree. I'm with you. There's a lot of things I think I wish we could change. Actively having some conversations with RIA on part of the council side of things, which would include Ed regarding some, you know, litigious parts of the industry and some other things. So like I'm with you on a lot of that. Question, what is something, if you had to do it over, what is something you wish you had done differently?
I think if I had to do it over again, going in to the part of our mitigation business where we were hiring employees, I probably would have put myself through some sort of education that helped me better understand the human dynamic, personalities early on. Because learning that late in the game, I think showed me, oh, okay, well, it makes sense why that person acted that way or did this or did that, right? And oh, I didn't see that coming because, well, that's because that's who that person is or was, right? And I didn't know that about them because I didn't know how to see the warning signs. The other thing I learned, I think, early on, well, no, really, it wasn't early on, was to trust my own gut. When my gut would churn at something somebody would do or say, I knew something was up, and it was all happening. Like, I could feel it, right? And I knew, but my brain's going, oh, but no, like, that person would never do that, right? This is a good human. That would never happen. Yeah, no, not so much. Your belly was right 100%. Your inner soul was telling you what you needed to know. Yeah.
And even on jobs, right? Like, for a long time, you always want to take every job. And you learn quickly that not all jobs are good jobs. And you have a feeling about it. But you're like, oh, but like, this will help because it's tight. And then it's such a nightmare to navigate some of that stuff. And it's so hard. I agree. Like, if we could learn to listen to ourselves better and trust the gut instinct that's like poking at you going, hey, this is not a smart decision. Instead of just being reactionary to it and going ahead and taking it. Like, we would win so many more times. Because, oh gosh, the number of times that happens. Well, so my last one really is you kind of answered already, but I'll let you share it again, which is, what is that one nugget of information that you'd want to share with someone that was going to step into an entrepreneurial role or journey?
Yeah. Get your head on right. Get your mindset where it needs to be to adapt and overcome every challenge that's going to hit you. And when you have a challenge, look at it as a gift, because it truly is. There is a book called Silver Boxes. You have to look it up. I haven't read it in probably 20 years, but I read it back way, way back in the day. It talks about just the silver boxes they're gifts. They're gifts that we don't realize are truly gifts. And I find that if you fight against those challenges, right, the journey is so bad. But if you just say, bring it, we accept this gift that you're giving us, and we're going to figure out where the silver lining is, and we'll make our way through this. You are so much better off. And I think people are put in front of us at the right times if we're willing to just see it. Like, we're self-aware, right? Be aware of your surroundings, be aware of the people that are around you, And there is a, there's a lot to be said about aligning your forces and not thinking you can do it all. You want to be that, right? You want to be the person that can do it all. But I think the sooner you realize that you're going to get further ahead faster by bringing onto your boat the people who can row harder, faster, stronger, get it done, right? That you're going to get a lot further ahead in that boat than if you're just that one person with that one oar
going in circles. The number of times I've been the cog in the whole process and blocked everything because I felt like I needed to make sure it was taken care of and done. And now being able to rely on my team and having these guys that are doing amazing things to move everything we've got forward is, some days I feel worthless as a result of that. But at the same time, I'm very grateful and proud of what's been built that they're taking care of. It's great. It's amazing.
So I also think, sorry. Go ahead. I was going to say, I also think that trust has to be earned. So your team, when you bring people in and you bring people onto that boat, you need to trust but verify. And I think anybody who looks at you and says, well, I don't like that, get off the boat, get them off the boat. They're telling
right.
you.
Right people, people, right seats. Yeah, get the right people in the right seats.
Yep. And when people show you who they are, believe them.
Yeah,
absolutely. When they show you that, you got to believe it. So,
Tina, it's been so great having you on.
Thank you, Clint.
I appreciate it so much. I'm so glad to have you finally get to join us and us to get together and have this conversation. It's enlightening and going to be valuable for all those people that listen to this and pick it up. And we may have to circle back to some more because, you know, we got to 50 minutes and we could still talk about a lot of things, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate you bringing us on board. And I love this. This is great. I love what you're doing. This is wonderful.
Thanks. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.